Are there certain streets that bikes are not allowed on?
I have a question about hand signals. I find I always lose my balance when I stick my arm out.
I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. Today, biking in traffic. How to be safe even if the last time you rode a bike, it was stationary. Chew On This takes place at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco. 10 food trucks serving up lunch and dinner 7 days a week. We're here because this show is all about community. How to make the best use of it to find answers to everyday problems. So where better to do our show than at a food truck park?
That looks amazing. What is that?
This is a brisket and coleslaw slider with homemade pickles on the side, and I cannot wait to eat it.
I'm getting one of those. Today, biking in a city. Welcome to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. We're at this food truck park because it's a vibrant public space where conversations happen and because we can't chew on ideas alone. We'll sample the food truck offerings later on. Now, this week's challenge, how to bike in a city without risking our lives. As I can see from the full bike racks, many people in our audience biked here today, and we've got two biking experts who can help answer our questions. Mark Caswell is program manager for the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. It's one of the oldest bicycle advocacy organizations in the country. Mark, you teach a lot of safety classes. Who attends them?
Sure. So the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition is proud to be the leading resource for street safety in San Francisco, and we're really leading the way nationwide in helping to create innovative education programs. We teach taxi drivers how to drive safely around people on bike, and then we also teach classes to the general public. In 2012, 1,200 people attended. Most of them are people who have actually never biked before in an urban environment and are wanting to learn a little bit more about how to be safe, comfortable, and integrate biking into their daily lives.
Later in the show, we'll be hearing more about that class for taxi drivers. Patrick Smith helps coordinate programs for Cycles of Change, an organization that teaches people about bicycles and addresses the causes of youth violence at the same time. Patrick, you offer free fix-a-thons. What is a fix-a-thon?
Well, basically we go to all the schools K through 12 in Alameda County, and we sign up various schools and say, hey, you've got X amount of kids that live within a 12-block radius of the school. I'd say 90% of them all ride bicycles. And, the one thing that'll take a kid off a bike is just a flat. So we'll say, hey, come on in. We'll sign up 60 students. We'll show them how to fix their bikes. And then we'll empower them how to, maintain the bicycle and then, pass on the knowledge. And a lot of times you'll get the parents involved. And it's a good way for kids and parents to kind of come together as a family and, cycle. So.
Wow. It sounds like you're doing great work. The streets surrounding us here at the Soma Street Food Park are flat, but most of San Francisco isn't. And yet, in the last 5 years, 70% more people are biking up and down the steep hills than ever before. San Francisco isn't alone in having more cyclists. A survey conducted by the United States Census Bureau shows that in the last decade, bicycle commuting is up across the nation by two-thirds. Is it any wonder? Who doesn't want to spend less time stuck in traffic? But many of us still aren't getting on a bike and pedaling where we want to go. What's stopping us? Fear? A lack of gear? Or, if you're already biking, how do you get your friends to join you? By the end of this show, you'll have some ideas for overcoming these challenges. Ideas to consider when you're ready to strap on that bike helmet and go for a ride. I'm going to ask the experts for advice with my own challenge.
I lived in China 20 years ago, and I biked everywhere. I biked in smog. I biked in snow. I biked in smoggy snow around traffic circles after midnight with long-haul trucks less than 2 feet away from me. Now, what you need to know about me is that my idea of risky behavior is driving with less than a quarter tank of gas. So what accounted for these feats of daring do? I'll tell you. It was flat. There were those traffic circles, so I hardly ever needed to stop. And there were these concrete barricades that separated me from the trucks on one side and the pedestrians on the other. Come back to the United States. My neighborhood, from a topographical perspective, is like the Himalayas, and I'm lucky if there is a stripe of paint separating me from a truck, and I have to stop all the time. And that's the deal breaker for me, because I have a terrible sense of balance, and it's when I'm slowing down, coming to a stop, my foot is not, you know, barely touching the ground because the seat's up so high that I feel like I'm going to crash. But I think I have a solution to this last problem. I want to run it by you. I am absolutely serious about this. Are there tricycles with gears?
Yes, there are.
That's very exciting information.
Yes, yes.
Tell me more about them.
Well, you know, I used to work with an organization where we had a, you know, folks that, you know, had issues around balance, that sort of thing, but wanted to get out the ride, you know. And there's a company out of Battery Park, New York, called Workman Cycles. They make a really awesome trike that's got an internal 8-speed shifting from Shimano, and it's geared pretty low, so you can make most of the hills, you know. It's, you're going to have to put a little effort into it, but they're really heavy-duty, 26-inch wheels, super beefy.
Yeah, I would say that another really great opportunity for someone who's new to riding or might not feel comfortable balancing when they reach a stop sign, you don't have to have your seat so high. You know, most of us are not racing, and the proper bike fit is what feels comfortable. So when you're riding in the city, you know, if your seat needs to be a little lower where you can put both feet flat on the ground and still feel comfortable, that's okay. And that's what you need to do. Just ride whatever feels comfortable. And you can always modify the seat height, modify handlebars, really just change your bike to make it feel right for you in your everyday life.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Chew On This. If you're just joining us, we're finding out how to bike safely in lots of traffic. Our experts are Mark Caswell with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition and Patrick Smith with Cycles of Change. Now, it's time for people in our audience to get their questions answered.
Hi, I'm Lori. I'm also a daily bike rider. And what do you recommend as a checklist to do before you start riding for the day?
Well, the one thing, Lori, I would do when you're getting out, before you get out on your bike, check your air pressure. That's the one thing I notice that people don't do enough of. You know, it'll say 80 PSI in your tires, and most people are running around, you know, 35 to 40. You know, you ride over, you know, just foreign objects in the road, you're susceptible to flats even more so. Make sure you have enough brake pad left. You know, winter weather, you know, you got to weatherize your bike. And so a lot of times people will have brake pads that are literally down to the metal. I'd also just make sure, you know, that your spokes, like your rear wheel, just check the tension of your front and rear wheels to make sure that they're good and solid. And tires. Just check the tread of your tire. A lot of times if you're riding on the same bike, you know, year round, you're going to, you know, probably change your tires at least two or three times, you know.
Good afternoon. My name is Heidi, and I understand since 2009, the city of New York has permitted bicyclists to bring their bikes into their places of business during the business day. And right now, my husband works down at South Park here in San Francisco, and not his company, but the landlord who owns the building where the company is, doesn't permit him to bring his bike in. He has to lock up his bike outside. He's had more stuff stolen. It's really, I think, criminal. What can we as cyclists do to ensure that people like my husband and other people who do bike to work are able to bring their bikes into a safe and secure place, into our office buildings? Thank you.
Yeah, New York City has really led the way in terms of bicycle access for employees, and their law is absolutely doing great and doing a lot to allow employees to be able to have a way to bring their bike inside their office. In San Francisco, in 2011, Supervisor John Avalos, working with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, introduced and passed legislation that does a very similar role, where anyone who is an employer can say, yeah, I'm comfortable with my employees bringing their bikes inside the space, leaning it up on a desk, parking it inside the conference room or a storage closet, or potentially building an interior bike parking area. The law that was passed in San Francisco was really groundbreaking in that it doesn't require the building owner spend any additional money to build a secure bike room, but instead the employer can rent that extra space and say, this is where I want my employees to be able to park their bikes, because I understand the value of allowing them to have a safe and secure place to lock their bike up throughout the day. And in the law right now in San Francisco, if for some reason someone is not allowed to bring their bike inside and their employer wants them to, they can go to the SF Environment website and file a claim and file a report that they are not allowed to be able to bring their bike inside. And that building owner either has to provide secure bike parking or allow those employees to bring their bikes inside.
Hi, my name is Volker Newman. I've been riding in the city for 8 years or something like that now, daily commuter. I love it. It's great. I've been reading on the social media a lot about bicycle policy and such things, and it seems to me that when a new apartment building is built, they require there to be car parking in a lot of it. I haven't seen any rules for bicycle parking. Also, that's a security sort of theft prevention measure. What other advice do you also have for theft prevention in general?
Well, the piece about, you know, keeping your bike safe. I'd say go out and buy yourself a really good, you know, lock, like a U-lock, kryptonite lock. Get used to taking your wheels off. You know, taking wheels on and off is really going to save you thousands or hundreds of dollars. And, you know, just being aware of, like, how you're locking your bike up. I've seen people countless times that will, you know, lock their bike up to itself, but, you know, just lean up against a building and someone just walks away with their bike. But the issue around like housing and having bike racks, I think that's something that, you know, here in the city they should probably, you know, with zoning or you know how contractors or, you know, zoning laws work, but that's something that needs to be addressed.
So. To echo Patrick's comment, a U-lock is essential. Cable locks don't count. They're so easily cut. They can be cut in second. If you're living in an urban environment, you must have a U-lock or a chain. To speak to the policy issues, throughout the United States, most developments require car parking as a minimum. In San Francisco, some of the areas have actually reversed that and said a maximum number of car parking spots are allowed, as well as, in fact, the planning code since the mid-90s has actually required any new construction to provide secure bike parking for residents. And that planning code is being updated regularly and is definitely one of the leading resources throughout the nation right now. But the best thing cities can do is provide a safe place for someone to be able to store their bike overnight, because otherwise bikes tend to disappear in the evening.
All the good ideas our experts are coming up with are up on our website, chewonthisradio.com. We'll hear more questions from our audience after this.
I'm really sorry, Steven, but your bicycle's been stolen. I was watching it for you till you came back in the fall. I guess I didn't do such a good job after all. I was feeling really...
We'd like to do a second season of Chew On This, and we could use your help. If you go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, you'll see a link to a brief survey. Fill it out and you'll show potential funders that Chew On This gives you the information you need to make the world a better place, starting right where you live. That's chewonthisradio.com. Thank you.
You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because we want to harness the power of community to find practical ways to solve problems. Today, how do you bike with confidence even if there isn't a single piece of spandex in your closet? Our experts are Mark Caswell with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. They provide valet parking for the bicyclists who ride to Giants baseball games and much, much more. Patrick Smith is with Cycles of Change. They teach young people how to repair bikes, and they did a survey that found that more than half of students in Alameda County, which is across the Bay Bridge from here, don't ride their bikes because they're broken and the kids either don't know how to repair them or can't afford to. So Cycles of Change brings free bike repair to them. Let's get some more of the audience's questions answered.
Hi, I'm JD. I have a question about hand signals. I know you're supposed to use them when you turn, but I find I always lose my balance when I stick my arm out. What's a good way to deal with that?
So, again, turn signals are really great for communicating with other people that you're sharing the road with. But again, if you're going at a reasonable speed, you're stopping at stop signs, and you're looking over and making eye contact with an individual, that's really first and foremost the most important part. The turn signals that you learned in driver's education, are good if you can do that. But if you don't feel comfortable taking your hands off your handlebars, you're not required to by law. So you want to just slow down and go at a speed that you do feel comfortable with. If you think about it, when you get to a stop sign and you step down on your bike, then you can easily use your turn signal as you need to.
You know, the other thing I wanted to tell you, too, is there's a couple of companies out that make turn signals for bicycles as well. You can probably Google them online, but they're pretty inexpensive. I think anywhere from like $20 to $50.
My name is Jonathan Gordon. I just moved here a week ago. Are there certain streets that bikes are not allowed on? And also, what are the green pathways on the road for?
Thanks, Jonathan. Welcome to San Francisco. It's a great place, and it's a great place to learn how to bike. So, the law again it varies depending on the state. In California, bicycles are not allowed on highways. They have to have a sign that's posted that specifically says bicycles are prohibited. Any other street in San Francisco and throughout Oakland, bikes are allowed on. If you don't see a sign that says bikes are not allowed, then they are allowed. That said, there's obviously some streets that are better for biking than others. Some of those include the green bike lanes, physically protected bikeways that are really separating motor vehicle traffic and bicycle traffic to allow people to easily get around town. No matter what street you're on, if you're riding in the right side of the road, you want to make sure that you're not riding very, very close to the doors of parked cars, because that could be really dangerous. So you want to make sure you're riding in a way where you're avoiding the door zone and controlling the lane if necessary, if there's not a bike lane there. One of the things that we do when we teach taxi drivers the rules of the road, we talk to them about the fact that someone might be riding on a street that doesn't seem like a bike street. And it seems weird that this bike rider is on this very fast, busy street. I remind them that that bike rider probably doesn't want to be there either. They don't want to be getting honked at, and they don't want to be on this scary, busy street. They'd much rather have a bike lane or a bikeway, but unfortunately, that's where their destination is at that time, and that's where they have to go. So we have a lot of free classes that the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition offers, as well as coalitions across the United States that teach people how to ride safely and comfortably. If you look up your local organization, you can find out about those classes, and they're usually free. Teach you really how to ride comfortably on those streets that aren't really built for bikes right now.
Hi, my name's Tim Hurley. I ride a lot in the city and also the region, but what do you guys suggest for getting more kids out on the streets?
I've showed up at skate parks where kids are riding, you know, vert on BMX bikes, and, you know, they're like, oh, man, I ran out of a tube or whatever. I'm like, hey, you know, I'll fix your bike. And then you get them involved and you ask them, like, well, where do you go to school? You know, work directly with the schools and just, you know, just do it that way, you know.
I think one of the other things that any city and county and individual really can do to help make more and more kids ride bikes on the streets is that we need to build the streets better for people to be able to bike easily and safely. There's a theory called 8 to 80. And if you're building a street where someone on a bike doesn't feel comfortable and they're either 8 years old or they're 80 years old, then you did something wrong. Right now, it takes a lot of bravery to ride a bike on most streets throughout the United States. And until we're building streets where people can feel safe and comfortable and confident while riding on bikes, which requires usually physical separation from motor vehicle traffic, we won't see as many children riding. Quiet, calm streets are the best way to get more kids riding. We've got to make sure we're not building big, scary streets that divide communities. We need to build small-scale streets that are built for humans in order to connect those communities.
You're listening to Chew On This. I'm Lisa Rothman. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how to bike safely in a city. We're at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco because food truck parks like this one give us the chance to hear from a broad range of community voices, voices like yours. If you weren't able to attend the show but you'd like to ask a question or share information, visit our website at chewonthisradio.com. Our experts are Mark Caswell, Program Manager with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, and Patrick Smith with Cycles of Change, which sponsors bike rodeos at schools. Let's hear what goes into making sure all the kids are saddled up.
Right now I'm working on a bicycle for the rodeo. This bike is, again, one that was donated to Cycles of Change, you know, generously. And typically a bike like this would end up in a landfill or, you know, discarded on the side of the freeway. You know, it looks like it's had a good life, and we're just kind of giving it a second chance, so to speak, with a youth or some young person that says, hey, I want to be part of the bike rodeo, but I don't have a bike. So
we're going to go ahead and supply a bike for them and, you know, keep it rolling.
Is this a five-year-old bike? Looks like it.
I think every kid should have that opportunity to have a bicycle. You know, every kid in this country should be able to ride a bicycle.
Well, there was nothing to do, like, when I was a kid around my neighborhood, you know, either, you know, hang out, get in the wrong crowd, you know. My name is San Saipon. I'm a psycho, multitask person, so I guess I do pretty much everything that psycho has to offer.
Center.
Oh, man, I got involved when I was a kid. I was actually in the program when I was a kid. They used to teach me how to fix bikes, and then I went away and then got in trouble and then decided to come back and, like, do some volunteer work, get out of myself, out of this trouble that I caused myself. And then after that, they saw opportunity in myself and said, hey, you know what, you want to help us out? And then next thing you know, it led from helping, volunteering, to like coordinating school, and then later on I'm all at all different cycles program, like Bike Mobile, Safe Route, after school program, the bike shop, so it's crazy. Rodeo is pretty much what they do is they teach safety, but it's in the area where it's blocked off the traffic, and they draw an obstacle course on the ground with chalks and stuff like that, and they have like billboards up. It's just fun hanging out with kids and also teaching them how to ride and stuff like that.
You understand this? We're ready to ride?
Yeah.
What is this again?
Bike rodeo.
Can everyone say it again?
Bike rodeo.
All right, we got the entrance over here. We're going to go in pretty soon.
Those kids at Westlake Middle School in Oakland are riding in that rodeo thanks to San Saifon, Patrick Smith, and Cycles of Change. Whether you're an old hand at riding your bike or new to the rodeo that biking in a city can be, what questions do you have for our experts?
Hi, my name is Patty Corwin, and I am beginning to feel more comfortable on my bicycle, trying to ride to work one day a week. And I have a question about the rear view mirrors on bicycles. I tried one once, a little one that clipped onto my helmet, and I wasn't sure if it made me feel safer or less safe, because looking into it kind of made me a little nauseous maybe, and I was confused whether I should be, you know, looking ahead or looking behind. That broke and I never got one again, but do you recommend them?
Well, I know that a lot of people do really enjoy the rear view mirror either on their helmet or it could be attached to the handlebars in order to know what's coming up behind them. I think it's a great safety device and a great way to really be aware of what's around you, so long as it's not distracting enough that you're not paying attention to what's in front of you. So it's up to you what you feel is the best for you. I would say, you know, give it a shot. It sounds like you gave it a shot. And if it didn't work for you, you know, a thing you can always do when you're hearing motor traffic or someone coming up behind you, it's called a shoulder check. What you do is you basically turn your chin towards your shoulder and just kind of look out of the peripheral vision of your eyes. That way you're still keeping your eyes in front of you and you're doing a quick little check behind you.
My name's Elisa Gallegos, and I have a question about riding at night. Can you tell us what are the basic things we need to have, and where can we, what are the resources we can purchase them so we're not spending a lot of money?
Yeah, so again, it varies depending on the state, but in California, a person on a bike is required to have a front white headlight that's visible from 300 feet, and they're also required to have a red reflector on the back of their bike. The San Francisco Bicycle Coalition also recommends you have a back red light that's either blinking or solid, which can count as a reflector. There's actually a few more things. You have to have reflectors on the side of your bike as well. And in California, that's the law. And there are great opportunities to buy lights at shops. You can easily go into a bike shop and help get the right ones there. There's a lot of new designs out right now. There's a bunch of USB chargeable ones, so you don't have to buy extra batteries. And one thing that the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition does in partnership with the transportation agency here in San Francisco is that we actually have about 2,000 lights that we get, 2,000 sets of lights, and we give them out to people who are riding at night without lights. During the daylight savings change, what we do is we go out to a secret location, we stand on a corner, and we wait for people to ride by without lights, and we stop them and give them a set of free lights in order to make sure that they're able to ride safely and easily.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here at the Soma Street Food Park about biking with confidence, whatever the time of day. We'll also meet a food truck owner who knows how to share the road with bicyclists and his employee who bikes to work. Food trucks rely on word of mouth, and so does Chew On This. The next time you're enjoying a meal with friends or coworkers, let them know the good ideas you heard here and send them to our website, chewonthisradio.com. That's chewonthisradio.com.
It was a jumbo hot dog with relish, mustard, sport peppers, and tomatoes.
French fries aren't bad either, and then there's this amazing green sauce.
Coleslaw, eggs, bacon.
A little sweet. Tastes like coconut.
Deep fried chicken.
A lamb and beef gyro.
Loaded with awesome ground chicken.
And I had a big 24-ounce can of PBR.
And everything I've eaten there has just been insane.
The people here at the Soma Street Food Park in San Francisco are enjoying many different kinds of food. I'm Lisa Rothman, and you're listening to Chew On This, Fresh Ideas Made to Order. We take a challenge people face in their daily lives and ask experts how to handle it. Today, how to bike safely, even if you're risk-averse like me. We're at this food truck park because Chew On This celebrates community. And what community celebration would be complete without food? Right around this time, the smells from the food trucks start to make my stomach rumble. So let's find out how the people inside the old world food truck feel about bicycling.
I commute to work every day on my bicycle.
And he's on time.
And I'm on time. Usually a little early. Unless I take the bus, that's when I'm late. So I go sunset to Dogpatch and back every day. I don't have a driver's license, so I love that I can get to work without having to rely on the bus system.
Diego, I met on Craigslist. He responded to an ad.
My name is Kenny Hockert. I am the owner and chef of Old World Food Truck. Driving around so much in the truck, I don't get to bike around as much. As an avid sort of city biker and supporter of that culture, you know, I definitely consider myself pretty hyper aware of the bike lanes. So it's really important if you're on a bicycle, you know, to be as predictable as possible, especially to a truck. You know, I can speak as someone that drives a truck. You know, I don't have any animosity toward bicyclists. It makes me more aware when I bicycle of, you know, what the cars can see and the trucks can see. Obviously, no one who drives a food truck or any other kind of truck wants to hit you or hurt you. What occurred to me was to do something that was near and dear to me, that was related to both my personal and family history. My mother and her parents were World War II Holocaust survivors and refugees, and they came to this country. I was born in the early 70s into sort of a family structure that was very close-knit. So I grew up with a lot of kind of this, you know, very sort of Jewish comfort food.
Number 38, your veggie witch and a side of pierogi. Thanks very much. For me, the most surprising and exciting part about this operation is that it's, with exception of bread and pasta, it's a totally from-scratch operation. So we're making everything. The little relish that goes on the pierogi, like, is a whole major operation. It, you know, takes a lot of time and ingredients, and it tastes good. And it tastes good because you can tell that every little element comes out of our kitchen.
You know, I grew up around food. I mean, for me, food was always comfort. I think it was, you know, it definitely connects back to that kind of Jewish family upbringing. You know, for me, I always found refuge in food. I always loved and wondered what was for dinner. You know,
that was, you know, always my thing whenever we were with my family. And, you know, I'd be asking about or trying to figure out what I was going to have for dinner while I was eating breakfast. You know, it was sort of, I think some of those things you just can't really explain how you developed that way. But for me, absolutely, just kind of knew that that's what I wanted to do.
I'm Lisa Rothman. You're listening to Chew On This. You just heard from the people inside the Old World food truck here at the Soma Street Food Park. Some of our audience members will have a chance to win a prize from Old World later on. It's one of 10 food trucks that come here daily on a rotating basis. The drivers of these food trucks know how important it is to be aware of bicyclists. Do taxi drivers? Mark Caswell, one of today's experts, teaches a class to make sure that the answer to that question is yes. Chew On This correspondent Charlie Mintz had a chance to attend.
Did you all have a good lunch? If you didn't, it's your own fault.
On the third floor of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency building on South Van Ness by Market Street, a group of about 65 taxi drivers in training sit at desks in a long, fluorescently lit conference room.
Now that you're going to become cab drivers, you're going to have to start finding places on this street to find, and good places to eat.
This mandatory one-day training class ends with a 70-question test, which earns the drivers a temporary operator's permit. Bike safety is the last lesson before the test, and it taps into a lot of frustration.
Too many people riding bikes these days. Sometimes when I make a right turn, some bikes, they come over me, and, oh, man, what was that? I said, you know, it was going to be an accident.
That's Mamadou Hassin. He used to drive a cab in Daly City. Now he wants to drive in San Francisco, so he has to get recertified. He's passed the background check, filed his applications. But if he wants to ace the test, he'll need to pay attention to this guy.
All right. So, hi, everybody. I'm Mark Caswell. I'm program manager of the San Francisco Bike Coalition.
Mark Caswell is one of those people you see biking in suits around the city. He's program manager for the San Francisco Bike Coalition, the city's most established bike advocacy group. Caswell has been teaching this class since it began over a year now, and he's seen almost 1,000 future taxi drivers come through. He says they're some of the most important drivers to reach.
The reason I'm talking to you as taxi drivers is because you are the ones who set the tone of the street. You're the ones who drive the most. You're the ones who have the most miles day in and day out.
Caswell has half an hour to teach these cab drivers how to coexist safely with cyclists. So he gets to the point quickly, gesturing at a photo of two drivers, one irate, one calm.
So you could either be this guy on the left, rah, 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 or you could be the guy on the right who's smiling and happy. It's up to you.
The lessons are ones you probably learned in driver's ed. Don't speed, share the road, and be aware of what's around you. Maybe you've heard about dooring. It's when a driver opens his car door into the path of a cyclist.
It's the third leading crash in San Francisco for bicycle injuries. A few years ago, a person was actually killed because of someone opening their door. They were traveling downhill and someone opened the door. The person was actually killed from that. So this isn't just oopsie, fall down, scrape a knee.
Caswell gives some tips to avoid the situation. Check your mirrors, advise passengers to watch out, and don't think you know everything.
Y'all probably were rolling your eyes and going, why are you going to do a section on turning? I bet you will learn something in the turning section. It will be something that will surprise you that you didn't know, most of you.
About 1 in every 10 accidents happens because a driver didn't turn properly. Right turns are especially dangerous because cars have to go into the bike lane. If the car or the bike doesn't follow the rules, things can get ugly. One driver shared his story of right turn rage.
Yeah, I make a right turn from 1000 to the 3rd Street.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the bike rider was behind me. When he stopped to make a right turn to let the traffic go, he hit my car, he spit in my window. What do you want me to do in this situation? I'm a limo driver and I have a customer in the car.
Yeah. So I'm going to explain how you turn right safely and easily
to avoid
scaring someone.
Caswell says there are rules drivers and cyclists can follow that make it easy to avoid this kind of situation. Ready? If you're a driver, signal. Check your mirror and your blind spot, and then go all the way to the curb before you turn right. Don't wait until you get to the intersection to swerve.
It's really simple. Turn from the curb. Simple three words there. Turn from the curb.
If you're a cyclist, stay aware and stay out of the driver's blind spot.
So what you would need to do is, if you're on a bike here, you'd want to slow down and give room and let someone go here.
Proper turning is important. But the bigger takeaway from Caswell's presentation is awareness. To demonstrate, he shows a video, totally unrelated to driving. On screen are two basketball teams, one wearing white, one wearing black.
So this is an awareness test. The question is, how many passes does the team in white make?
The players fan out and start passing the ball back and forth.
What'd you get?
13.
13? Yep, 13. But here's the question. Did you see the moonwalking bear? Anyone?
No, we did not see the moonwalking bear.
No one? Let's watch the clip one more time.
Caswell rewinds, slows down, and plays the clip again. Yep, there is a guy in a bear suit doing a pretty decent moonwalk right through the middle of the group. We were all so focused on counting the passes that we didn't notice him at all. Caswell makes the lesson explicit. That bear could be a cyclist. You have to train yourself to expect him.
So it's easy to miss something that you're not looking for. You were all focused on that ball, and you missed this guy in a big old bear suit dancing in the middle of the thing.
By the end of class, the drivers know a lot of useful things, like that bike riders are allowed to use a full lane if there's no other good option, how to enter the protected bike lanes to pick up disabled passengers. But most importantly, they know that bikes and taxis, they don't have to be enemies. After class, a driver named Hisham El Amwari, who passed his 70-question test and earned his temporary permit, says he feels ready to deal with San Francisco bike riders.
I'm originally from Morocco, so I used to drive a bicycle. So I know what it is, you know. I can tell it's hard to drive in San Francisco bicycle because of the lot of, there's a lot of cars, Mionis, and a lot of hills. It's hard. Yeah, so I respect them a lot. So when I'm going to be like a taxi driver, I'll give them all their rights.
There's no data on the class's effectiveness, but the San Francisco Bike Coalition reports anecdotally that after taking the class, the city's new taxi drivers feel ready to hit the road and not the horn. In San Francisco, I'm Charlie Mintz for Chew on This.
You're listening to Chew on This. I'm Lisa Rothman. We're talking about biking safely and sharing the road with taxi drivers, food trucks, cars, and buses. You'll find links to the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, where Mark Caswell works, and Cycles of Change, where our other expert, Patrick Smith, works. They'll both be up on our website, chewonthisradio.com. When we come back, we'll get more audience questions answered, and we'll tackle the Meal of Fortune Challenge.
Riding my bicycle, riding my bicycle, riding my bicycle, riding my bicycle, so smooth. When I was 9 years old, I had my bicycle. Now that I'm 31, I think it's just as fun. So
the first season of Chew on This has 5 episodes. Would you like seconds? You can help make that happen. Simply go to our website, chewonthisradio.com, click the link to the survey, and in less time than it takes to order from a food truck, you show potential funders that Chew on This is connecting with you and making a positive impact. That's chewonthisradio.com. Order up! You're listening to Chew on This. I'm Lisa Rothman. If you're just joining us, we're talking about bikes and bike safety with our experts. Patrick Smith is with Cycles of Change. They keep young people riding to school safely by giving out free helmets and lights. Mark Caswell is with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. They managed to get bike lanes on a major San Francisco road, even though the director of the Department of Parking and Traffic at the time said, "There'll be bike lanes on Valencia Street over my dead body." Let's get some more questions answered.
Hi, my name is Kari. My question is about what are the top causes of accidents between bicyclists and motorists, I guess.
In terms of riding a bike in an urban environment, we're not talking about necessarily country roads here, but focusing more on the urban environment. In San Francisco in 2011, which is the data that is most recently available, the number one cause of crashes between bikes and cars was unsafe turning without signaling. It's often what we've been talking about for this hour, about how people are properly turning right, making sure people are moving all the way over, using their signals, but also just being far enough over that they're not going to cut someone off on that way. The first part for that unsafe turning without signaling is 19% of all crashes in 2011 for bike and cars. Number two was unsafe speed, which means someone was not in control of either their bike or their car, and they were traveling at a speed in which they were not able to control it and prevent the crash from happening. That was 15%. The third is what you specifically mentioned, which is opening a door into traffic. In California, it is against the law to open your door into traffic. Bicycles are traffic, and if you open your door and a bike rider ends up hitting your door because you opened it, technically the driver is the one at fault there and can be cited, and oftentimes is the one whose insurance company has to pay for any damages there. So the best way to avoid all of these is both by riding defensively, being aware of that right turn and moving out to the left, not being in the blind spot, unsafe speed, be in control of your bike, be in control of your car, and make sure that you're able to respond to any potentially surprising behaviors that come from the other person. And then for dooring, you always want to make sure when you're riding a bike, you want to ride at least 3, if not 5 feet from any parked car. You never want to really squeeze between a motor vehicle and a parked car because you don't know if that door's going to open and end up causing a crash there. And California law specifically says that you have the right to take the lane if you need to in order to be safe if there is a parked car next to you or debris or for any reason that you feel it's unsafe to ride safely side by side next to a parked car or moving car.
Hi, my name is Casey Cohn. I have limited experience cycling in San Francisco, but when I have come into the city to cycle, I found that the majority of my close calls have happened when I'm riding straight through an intersection and a car turns right in front of me. So I'm wondering what I can do to minimize my risk in that situation.
And that was an issue that came up in the story that you did with the taxi drivers as well. There was one very irate taxi driver.
Yeah, so the law in California is that when you are turning right, you must turn from as far right as you can on the street. If there is a bike lane, the driver is required to enter the bike lane and drive in the bike lane before turning right. That's why if you notice in a bike lane, you'll see that the solid white line becomes dashed before an intersection. So one of the things that the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition is doing by educating taxi drivers is to teach them how to properly turn right in order to make sure that they're being safe with people on bike. The line that I like to share with them is, if a bike rider squeezes between your car and the curb, it means you didn't turn from as far right as you could, in which case you were the one who was breaking the law there. Now, that said, law is one thing, but it's about your own personal safety. So what you can do is ride defensively. If you notice that a car is next to you coming up on an intersection, you want to try and not be in their blind spot. If it means pedaling a little faster in order to get in front of their car so you're inside the driver's visual field, or you slow down and cut left a little bit, that works just as well. Obviously, we can only be responsible for our own safety and our own behavior, and sometimes someone's going to be unpredictable on the streets, whether they're on two wheels or behind the steering wheel. So you got to make sure that you're doing what you can in the defensive position there. It's defensive driving, defensive biking.
You know, another thing that kind of works, and people have used a long time, cycling, where I grew up back east, is to have just a whistle. Believe it or not, just around your neck, just to kind of alert, you know, drivers sometimes that aren't paying attention, you know, kind of grabs their attention at the moment. So.
Turn from the curb. Words to live by. All the good ideas our experts are coming up with are on our website, chewonthisradio.com. It's time to tackle the Meal of Fortune Challenge.
Riding your bike and getting a flat tire is no fun. Until now. Patrick Smith with Cycles of Change has brought along some flat tires. We've divided into teams here at the Soma Street Food Park, and we're going to see which two teams can fix their flat the quickest. Obviously, the people who've done this before have an advantage, so they're going to go first, and they'll compete against each other. Then the people who haven't done this before are going to have their chance. Are you pumped?
Yeah!
Patrick, show us how it's done.
All right. So, first thing we do, we got our trusty tire lever. And essentially, what we do is we get that lever underneath the tire bead and go around either counterclockwise or clockwise. Then, get in there, we pull the tube out, and then the one thing I always do, you know, 5 minutes, you can get this thing on and off. But what I do is I take the tire off completely. So what I do is I run my hand on the inside of the tire and make sure there's no foreign debris in there, usually glass, all sorts of stuff. But anyways, that's what you want to do. Usually, once you get good at this, you can usually take a tire off, tube out, put a new tube in, be back on the road within 5 minutes.
Spoken like a true expert. All right. Our first competition is about to begin. What are your team names?
San Francisco Yellow Bike Project.
Wheel Kids Bicycle Club.
Berkeley Bikers.
Our experts will adjudicate the winners. On your marks. Get set. Go. Are we getting close? It looks like we're getting close with some of these people. It
looks like we're getting real close. There's a couple... Well, it looked like he's almost in the home stretch here.
San Francisco Yellow Bike Project's in the home stretch.
Yeah, he is. He's like...
We got the pump up? Oh, yeah, we got the pump right here.
He's got the pump right there. Oh.
Free food!
Free food! We'll see. Well, gotta get my pump on.
Recommended inflation is 40 PSI. Hey!
Whoa. All right. We have a winner.
We do. 145.
And our winner is?
Wheel Kids Bicycle Club.
And what did he clock in at?
He clocked in at 145.
Knowing how to change a flat is one of the basic maintenance skills that make life easier for any biker. Taking the tire into the shop takes time and money. Wouldn't it be better if you could just do the work yourself? If you'd like to learn how to change a flat tire, visit our website, chewonthisradio.com, for a link to a video.
Now it's time for the people who've never done this before to give it a try. Let's hear your team names.
The Awesome Bikers.
The Rocky Roadsters.
Will Change for Food.
Ready.
On your marks. Get set. Go. Will Change for Food has successfully reassembled the tire and the wheel and the tube, and now they are going to pump. Pump to 40 PSI.
I can't get it on.
We've got a winner. All right.
It's all you, girl. It's all you.
And the winning teams are Wheel Kids and Team Awesome Bikers. You're probably wondering, what did they win? What is today's meal of fortune? Brisket sliders and mushroom sliders from Old World Food Truck. The brisket slider contains tomato and brandy braised brisket and caramelized onion. The mushroom slider contains portobello mushroom and horseradish aioli. They both contain cabbage slaw. We've learned so much here today at the Soma Street Food Park. Thank you, Mark Caswell with the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition and Patrick Smith with Cycles of Change for sharing your expertise with us today.
Our time together is drawing to a close, which means we've got some delicious brisket sliders and mushroom sliders from Old World Food Truck to give away. The winners of the Meal of Fortune Challenge were Wheel Kids and the Awesome Bikers. They won today's Meal of Fortune because they fixed their flat tires the quickest. But you can also win the Meal of Fortune with luck. People here at the Soma Street Food Park have placed their names in the official Chew on This picnic basket, and one was drawn at random. The lucky winner is...
Randall Cabajal.
Our production engineer is Jim Bennett. Matt Martin, the general manager of KALW, is our advising producer. Ashley Ann Krigbaum is our outreach coordinator and production associate. Maggie Ballard is our creative consultant. Our mic mavens today are Eileen Alfandari and Allie Budner.
The sound editor is Eric Wayne. Brent Norton composed the theme music. Our on-site director is Marilyn Pittman. Justine Choi, Melissa Fries, Luis Granados, Julieta Kusnir, and Connie Chan Wang are the show's idea advisors. Special thanks to our audience here at the Soma Street Food Park for asking such great questions. And thanks to our host here at the Soma Street Food Park, Carlos Muela, and to everyone at KALW's Cross Currents. As you look at this, what interests you about it?
Well, the size, for one. And it looks beautiful, has some melted cheese on it, some marinated onions, looks fabulous.
It's good.
Do you like the cucumber?
Yeah.
Go to chewonthisradio.com for information about upcoming episodes, more bicycling suggestions, and a place to share your own biking successes and challenges. I'm Lisa Rothman. We've heard a lot of great ideas today. Until next time, try one out and let us know how it goes. Next time on Chew On This, making home improvements without decimating the rainforest or your wallet.
I'm about to embark on a very large project of removing the entire bottom floor of my house.
And I'm interested in taking the carpeting out of my condo and replacing it with hardwood or bamboo.
That's next time when we Chew On This.